God, please teach us. Again, I ask you to forgive us for our presuppositions and our false ideas about you. Cause us to see that when we have a view of you that is contrary to who you are, it's idolatry. Cause us to see that idolatry is not acceptable. It's essential that we're always in the process of renewing our minds and being progressive, growing in our relationship with you. Thank you for the opportunity to do this. Thank you for your word. Thank you for the richness of your word. Teach us from it. Jesus, we trust that you said that it was better that you go away because you'll send your spirit to teach us, spirit of truth. So we're dependent on that. I certainly would rather have you teaching here than me. There's not much comparison there, so we trust that your spirit will teach. Soften our hearts and teach us to your glory. Amen. So Matthew 25, we're on the third parable that Jesus gave, in the parable of the talents. A little bit of background first. You know, Jesus is in just after the Olivet Discourse in Matthew 24, when Jesus prophesied some very he told the future, told about what would happen and what it would look like. Very, very factual stuff. I would say very hard to understand. I would say very misinterpreted. The propensity of us all is to want to figure out what it's going to look like, to have that theology correct. Now I'm good and I'm happy and I'm content. And Jesus said Jesus told parables about, okay, so now what? What do you do? How do you live your life? Because that's really what matters. It isn't a matter of knowing truth. It's a matter of how does it affect your life. There's an interesting thing that I want you to consider in these parables, obviously, somebody who is going to enter into his kingdom and share in his riches and his glory, who is going to be cast into utter darkness where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth, is going to go to hell for eternity, right? In all three of these parables. The interesting thing that we need to consider in this is that this is not speaking of pagans who reject the image and concept of God and those who claim to know God. Okay? All of these people claim to be followers of God. They all claim to be servants of God. We tend to think that it's the pagans that are going to be cast. It is the pagans. It is those who reject God, those who obviously reject God, those who say, I don't believe in God. I don't believe there is a God. I'm not going to serve God. I will serve myself. Or I will serve other gods than the God of this Bible. That really isn't a question. And it really wasn't a question for Jesus or the people around him. We tend to put that in the category and those who say they believe in Jesus. Unfortunately, that's not the way Jesus explains it. Because who Jesus is discerning what the kingdom of heaven will look like is all of these people claim to believe and be followers of Jesus. Claim to be followers of God. Okay? They were all slaves. They were all slaves of the same master. They all addressed their master as Lord. Okay? So, let's be clear about that, because Jesus, he isn't taking, okay, those who completely disbelieve in God and those who claim to believe in God. That's not the distinction he's making. He's making a distinction between those who he's dividing those who claim to be servants of God and follow God. Right? He gives three parables here, and I think that they're really important for us to understand, because he is saying, what does it really look like to be a servant of the king, to be a willing servant of the king? The first one that we talked about in 24 was talking about who then is a faithful and sensible slave whose master put him in charge of his household to give him their food at the proper time. Okay? So these are slaves of the master. Blessed is the slave whom his master finds doing so when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But if that evil slave, now remember they're both slaves. They're both claiming to be slaves. They both call their master, master. But if the evil slave says in his heart, my master is not coming for a long time and shall begin to beat his fellow slaves and eat and drink with drunkards, the master of that slave shall come on a day when he does not expect him and an hour which he does not know. Again, this is not the pagans who worship in another land somewhere. This is calling those who call him master, okay? And what does he say? And he shall cut them in pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites. Weeping shall be there and gnashing of teeth. If that doesn't give you some goosebumps, God said that. This isn't Charles Manson. Okay? Some of you might not know who he is. I guess that's my day thing, But most of you probably do. So, this is God, this is Jesus saying that the master, how he would treat those who do not act correctly. Now, again, it isn't a matter of the words they say. I believe that the first ones were those, the first, and this it kind of goes in progression, if you ask me. All four of these, there's four parables. Three of them are about a description of what it looks like to act in the kingdom. The fourth one is a description of Jesus' judgment on mankind and Jesus' distinction between them, okay? We're on the third one in Matthew 25, calling the parable of the talents. And I believe it's a culmination in the progression of the first two. The first parable that he talks about, what was the problem here? He wasn't doing what his master told him to do, okay? That he saw the delay in his master coming, he said, I've got plenty of time. I can follow Jesus when I want. I can follow God when I get to it. When I get older, then I'll really get serious. But for right now, I want to do what I want. And I think that this is a tendency that we all have, whether it be for the next hour, whether it be for the next 5 minutes, or whether it be for the next 5 years, we all have the tendency to go, I have plenty of time to serve God. We have plenty of time. He's delaying. It's a long delay. And I have plenty of time. When I get older, then I can do this. The thing that's important to understand is what he commanded him to do, and this is understanding the talents is very, I will say this. I ask you to please try to check your presuppositions and your definitions. I would say at the door, but you already threw the door. So I would say try to think for a minute different, because the parable of the talents, I would say, has been greatly misunderstood and wrongly interpreted. Okay? We tend to have the perception that is talking about us using our talents to serve God. Okay? And that if I don't use my talents to serve God, then I'm in trouble. But if I use my talents, then I will get riches in heaven. Now, we tend to add on to that a little bit, and this talks about, we say this not talking about salvation, this is talking about rewards. So if you use your talents a lot, and use your talents well, you'll have lots of rewards in heaven. But your salvation's still okay. Your salvation's still guaranteed. That is not what he is saying. This doesn't give that condition of, you'll get lots of rewards if you use your talents well, but your salvation is still guaranteed here. He's talking about your eternity, the state of your eternal well-being is at stake here, depending on what the reality of your belief system in God is. The first one says, what was his command? His command was to love, right? He says to feed my servants, feed my household in time, right? To serve my household. That's what he told them to do. and they were slothful, and they were lazy, and they were selfish, and they decided, I don't really want to do that right now. I don't really want to love. The biggest understanding of the parable of talents, like most of the Bible, and I say this often, but again, I don't think we can say it too much, it's really critical that we redefine our view of what biblical love is, of what agape love is. Okay? If I hold on to the world's view of what love is, self-righteousness will absolutely creep in. I will completely misinterpret what God commands us to do. Okay? If we tend to think of agape love as liking, okay? And therefore, liking is being nice too, right? Because I like you is being nice. So we tend to think of loving somebody as being really nice to them. Okay? So, he thinks you need to read a little, huh? So, good. They're sharing. So being nice has nothing to do, let me just say this, being nice has nothing to do with it. Well, we were supposed to be nice, okay? But you will not find the definition of biblical love having to do with being nice. Biblical love is service. That's what it means. As feelings might be associated with it, feelings might come, being nice might be associated, not being seeming nice. Again, nice, you have to stop for a minute. If I am nice, that is completely dependent on how you feel about me, right? Not on my actions necessarily. So my determination if I'm nice or not is relative to how you determine or how you feel about me, right? So then we say that love, in order for me to seem nice, because that's what loving you is being nice, that means that I act in a way that will make you like me. Okay? That doesn't necessarily have anything to do with love. Alright? Love is service. Love is laying down your life for others. Love is regarding others as more important than yourself. That's what biblical love is. That's what agape love is. It's not liking a whole lot. It's, I like you, I really, really, really like you. Okay, that must be agape love, right? Because if it's God, it must be a lot, right? So I must really, really, really like you. No, that is not the direction to go with love. That is not what biblical love is. Biblical love is regarding others as more important than yourself. Okay? Be really clear on that. When the master commanded the slave to serve his sheep, to serve his people, he was telling them to love those people, okay? And the good servant did what he was told. He did what God told him to do, and that he spent his life feeding the sheep. Even though his master was delayed for a long time, he continued to feed, okay? The wicked servant said, I don't feel like loving people. You know, I feel like doing what pleases me. I feel like doing what makes me happy. I feel like doing what makes me feel good. And so, me giving my life for other people and pouring out to other people isn't what I feel like doing. I mean, I got my whole life to do that. The second one we talked about was the parable of the 10 virgins. Okay? And this is a very, very critical one. You know, that all these virgins, and again, remember, this is not talking about pagans who have no regard for God and those who say they believe in God, okay? Because all these, it describes them all the same. They all look the same, right? They were all virgins. They were all wanting and willing and desiring and enthusiastic about going and meeting the bridegroom, right? They all have lamps, okay? And the lamp thing is probably a little hard for us to understand. There's a lot of directions to go there, but the one that's important is one of the commands God gives us to be a light to this world. Okay? We are to be a light to this world. What does that mean? We are to be the light of the world. These virgins were to bring light when they went to be able to see. I'm not exactly sure. There's some speculation about Jewish wedding tradition, but the issue is they all had lamps. They were obviously supposed to have lamps. They were supposed to have lamps to light the way. All of them were supposed to have it. That's a given in the thing. So they all had lamps. They were all virgins, right? They were all enthusiastic about meeting the bridegroom. They left their houses when they waited outside on the corner for the bridegroom to come past. Right? But half of them went to hell. Half of them did not get into the wedding. How does that work? Okay? They had the outward form of religion, but no internal power. What is the difference in the two? The only difference that Jesus gives for the two people, they look the same, they acted the same, they all have lamps. The difference was half of them didn't have power to light their lamps, which is oil. Okay? They didn't have the power to light their lamps. They didn't realize. It wasn't a matter of how they looked. And then when they thought, when the bridegroom came, what did they say? Hey, can we share some of yours? Jesus was teaching, you cannot assimilate other people's power. The power has to come from inside. This is something that is not something that, by association, I'm validated. We tend to think of that by the church we go to, by the denomination we're in, by the words that we speak with our mouth. If I speak correct theology, if I speak correct doctrine, that must mean that I'm right, because that's what these people say. And of course, that guy is a Christian, right? He's a leading evangelical. And if I agree with him, that must make me okay. And God can't judge me if he's not going to judge him. I'm sure God's not going to judge Billy Graham, because he was really a Christian. So if I agree with him, then I'm good. Jesus is saying there won't be assimilation. You have to have the power to be the light. So here we come to the parable of the talents. A talent, let's first take out of your thinking, if you can. This is not talking about your ninja skill set, okay? Alright? This is not talking about, I can dance, you know? This is not talking about your show ability, alright? The talent, and we understood it at the time, we tend to put that directly in context of how we define it in our culture. We need to be very careful in the Bible with doing that, okay? We need to make sure that we are interpreting what he's saying by what he was saying to the people he was saying it to, alright? They understood what talent meant, and talent had nothing to do with what you're going to do in the show to dance or tap dance or however you're going to get it done, okay? That isn't the talent. Talent is a measure of money, okay? And he was talking about a measure of money. Now, it's really cool, you know? Let me digress for a minute and say that I think Jesus taught in parables a lot, right? And oftentimes it's like, why did you do this? Why couldn't you just tell us? Okay? I mean, come on, we want to go to McDonald's, you know? We want to think down. I don't want to wait and prepare and go kill a cow. I mean, my gosh, you know? I don't want to do this. We want expedient truth to do it. Jesus was very careful. A lot of his great, deepest, most important teaching was done in parables. Right? Hard to understand. Right? Difficult to understand. Why did he do that? Because he was trying to be a pain? Because he was trying to hide? Because he didn't want us to know truth? I think it has to do a lot with culture. We are very much in this culture about immediate gratification. And yet we are commanded to act differently than that. We are commanded to meditate, number one. Okay? And I believe that parables are rich, important material given for meditation. Okay? Because it's in the process of mulling over truth and trying to figure it out and going, God, what do you think? What did you mean? Is where the truth becomes real to us. Okay? If I just give you the answer, it's no different than cramming for a test, right? We all know it and we all did it in school and in college. Most of us did. Terribly. But, you know, you spend 3 hours right before the quiz, you get all the answers down doing it, and what happens? All that information that you did come in virtually goes out on the paper and is done. You didn't learn anything, right? That's not the process they try to set you up in. They say, you've got all semester to learn this information. You've got all semester to do this, right? So you're in the process. So it's actually becoming yours. So you understand it in a deep way, in a real way. It's not what we want to do. We want to cram for the test. But that's the way we are with life. And let me just say, that is the way we are in our relationship with God. Just give me the answer. I just want to cram for the test. I just want to know the answer here. And that is not the way it works to have a deep relationship with God. A deep relationship with God comes from the process of being still and knowing that He is God. Of meditating on His truth. I had a wonderful trip coming back up through Nevada, Friday. So, I was moving my mother-in-law up here, and so I was by myself in her car out through Nevada. Nobody else, once I got past Las Vegas. I don't know what. California's crazy, man. I was 4:30, I was on the freeway, and there was four lanes of traffic going. I'm thinking, what are these people doing? It's crazy. By 6 o'clock, it was stopped coming the other way, and I'm going, oh, hurry up, I'm heading the right way, get out of here. Once I got out of there and hit Vegas, I was pretty much on my own for 8 hours, whatever, on doing it. Out through Lone Star. I love that time. It's a wondrous time. And I'm not disciplined off enough to make that time happen even if I'm not driving to the middle of Nevada. Okay? When you're driving through, you're trapped. There's really nothing you can do. There's no good radio stations. You try it once in a while, it just makes you crazy. You shut it off halfway through this first song. Okay, now what? I love it. Because that is the time when I believe, as we're all supposed to, God, what did you mean? What did you mean? What did you mean in those parables? Have a conversation with God? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Call me crazy. That's what I'm saying. Have a conversation with God. Does He then answer back? What do you think? Oh yeah, He does. And yeah, He wants to. And yeah, He wants to teach you. Okay? It is an intimate personal relationship. That's what He longs for. I don't know why He wants to have that relationship with me. That is the most difficult dichotomy for me to understand. Is why God, being perfect, without need, desires to have an intimate relationship with me. But He does. I know that to be true. He died for that to happen. That's how much and how serious He is about it. So I know it's true. And it's a wonderful thing as you mull it over and you think about it. I find that with the parables. The parables of the 10 virgins, I'm going, okay, what do we do here? And I have to say that in the last couple of days, I'm going, oh my gosh, there's no way I'm going to get done Thursday or Sunday, it's sweet, the richness of it. And again, this is Jesus teaching, okay? This is not David trying to tell a story, okay? This is Jesus, the one who spoke this world into existence. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. I do believe that He limited Himself to His manhood and the limitations of manhood and did not exhibit His divinity distinct from us in how we can act. But this is a man of, it's amazing. I was in a discussion the other day with somebody speaking about, Jesus' knowledge of God and how He had such knowledge of God. And the thing was, well, that's because He was infinite. And He knew that from a little kid because He always... I don't think that's true. Why did He spend 30 years studying for 3 years of ministry? Huh? If he had all the understanding when He was a little kid... Why didn't He just do it? Why didn't He just, let's get this done, I know what I'm here for. I know what I gotta do. He spent 30 years, and we don't know, there wasn't ministry happening that we know of. Was He obedient to God? Yes. Does that mean that He was loving the people around Him? Absolutely. Was He pretty much isolated in some little spot in the hills of Nazareth? Yeah. Yeah, 30 years that He spent being in tune with God. And this is after he had, at 12, he had a strong knowledge of the scriptures. Enough that it amazed the Pharisees and the scribes. But in his understanding, he was already there. And he spent another 18 years meditating, getting to know his father. Okay? This is a very... We are so... I want immediate gratification in what happens here. Parables are rich with truth. And Jesus says, okay, I just gave you this order of things in eschatology, this prophecy in chapter 24, right? And I don't know, we could spend the next, in fact, it's been done for a long time, but we could spend the next 5 years sitting here discussing exactly what that order looks like. And these people over here believe this is what the order of end times looks like. And these people say this is what the order of end times looks like. And this is what the order of end times look like. This is when the rapture's happening, and this is when the millennium's happening, and this is when things are going down. We don't know. You know? How many times did they get prophecy right? Jesus says, you know what really matters? Is how you live. What really matters is, are you watchful? That's what the purpose of these are. And what does it mean to be watchful? And this is what he's describing. Are you watchful? Talents is, you know, we tend to, there's oftentimes, it's like the bridegroom wasn't very nice. He slammed the door and said, you're not allowed in. God, he wasn't very nice, you know. And it's like the other bridesmaids, you know, they weren't very nice. You know, they said, no, I'm not going to share with you, you know. Not the verse necessarily to teach your children, you know, but the prudent answered, no. There will not be enough for us, and you too. Go ahead to the dealers and buy some for yourselves. That is not the way it was said. That is not what was said, okay? Be clear on that. It's very easy to, you know, I wouldn't necessarily use that verse directly to have your children memorize in order to learn how to share, okay? But the truth of it is they were saying, this can't be assimilated. This isn't something we can share. You know, the power for obedience and the power to love isn't something that we can share. The talent is, it seemed like the guy wasn't very nice, you know. You kind of got the smart guy that got 5 talents, and then you got the kind of okay, middle average guy that got 2 talents, right? And you got the guy that's kind of dumb, kind of the retard that got 1 is all, you know. I mean, it's easy to kind of look at that, right, and go, wow, he only got 1 talent. Nice. What it, understand talent, number one. I think that Jesus said, this is important to understand. A talent was worth somewhere around $1,000. Most would estimate about $960. Well, that's not very much, okay? This is a money equation that he's talking about in this case. About $960. But you need to interpret that into that day. That's $960 in our day. A day's wages in those days was $16. Okay? A day's wages in that day was 16 cents. Okay? So a year's wages was about $50. Okay? So 1 talent given to him was how much? About 20 years worth of salary. 1 talent. Okay? Would have been somewhere around $1.5 million. No, I'm sorry. Would have been somewhere around $750,000. $750,000 that he gave him to deal with. If it was in our day. Okay? 2 would have been about $1.5 million. And 5 would have been about $3.8 million. Okay? That he gave them to deal with. Right? So, and Jesus used those numbers just to, if they understood those numbers, okay? If they understood what a talent was. They understood what a denarius was. A denarius was a day's wage. It was about 16 cents. Okay? They understood what a talent was. So, get out of our minds that he wasn't trusting them with much, right? He was entrusting them with $750,000 with 1 talent. A guy with 1 talent, okay? So, I really believe, again, it's not about the money. Jesus used that just to say, let's not go there, okay? That isn't what it's about. There's speculation. I mean, I've heard this parable discussed in light of investing. We're supposed to invest. See? God said we're supposed to invest. supposed to invest our money wisely. That's a tragic, shallow, wicked interpretation of what this is talking about. Okay? That is not what he is talking about. That we're supposed to be good capitalists. Okay? This is not about investing our capital or me having control of my destiny in my capital. Okay? That is not what this is talking about. Again, talent is money. Let's read what this parable says and take it apart, because I think that it's, what is the talent today? What does that mean? What does he entrust us with? Because that's the part that's important, is what we do with the talent that he entrusts us with. That's really what this is about. Because how we deal with the talent that he gives us, and again, try to reorient your thinking about what a talent is. What we do with that has to do with whether we will spend eternity blessed in the presence of God, or we will spend eternity in hell. So this is a big deal. Okay? This is a big deal. Let's read verse 14 of chapter 25. For the kingdom of heaven, again, he's talking about, he's explaining what the kingdom of heaven looks like. And I think we need to be careful. The kingdom of heaven isn't just the future. I believe it's pretty obvious when, is Jesus king? Whether we acknowledge him or not as king, he is king. He is King Jesus. He was in the beginning with God. He created this world. He spoke it into existence. He lived and ruled and reigned with God. He spent a very little minute period of time becoming human flesh, and now he lives again as King Jesus. Okay? Don't misunderstand. He is not this pathetic little hippie looking dude sitting at the right hand of Jesus like a puppy of God, like a puppy dog waiting to go, hey, when am I going to do something here? Okay? King Jesus is in heaven. Okay? And if I am a born-again believer, what do I acknowledge? I acknowledge his lordship. I acknowledge his kingship. Okay? If we have a king and we have subjects of the king, what would you call that? A kingdom? Okay? We call that a kingdom. Okay? A kingdom is when you have a king, a ruler, and you have subjects that are under his authority. Okay? Is that happening now? That is supposed to be happening now. That is happening now. Okay? Someday will this whole earth be in subject to his rule and reign authority. And those who do not acknowledge him, yes, that will happen. That will happen. So his kingdom is existing and future when he sets up on earth as King Jesus. And that will be a wondrous time for some and a terrible time for most, as he says. He explained to them what it looks like, because now you have this timeline eschatology. So how are you going to live now? Okay? What does this mean to you? For it is just like a man. He says this is just like a man. Okay? I would say that's pretty similar. Okay? He is just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to him. Okay? All of them were slaves. And to one he gave 5 talents, and to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability. And he went on his journey. Immediately, the one who had received the 5 talents went out and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more. But the one who received 1 talent went away and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. And the one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful in a few things. I put you in charge of many things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. The one also who had received 2 talents came up and said, Master, you entrusted to me 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You are faithful with a few things. I put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. And the one who had received the one talent came up and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid, and I went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. But his master answered and said to him, you wicked, lazy slave. You knew that I reaped where I did not sow and gather where I scattered my seed. Then you ought to have put your money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has shall more be given, and he shall have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he has shall be taken away. And cast out the worthless slave into the outer darkness, in that place where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. There's some really important things here that are very pertinent to our lives, okay? The first one that I want you to look at is he gave 1 talent, 2 talents to another, each according to his own ability, and he went on his journey. That word ability is a very important word for us to understand. That the word is dunamis. Okay? The word is dunamis. It's used over 100 times in the New Testament. And it means power. And it's almost unequivocally related to miraculous power, to supernatural power, to the power of God, also spiritual power in the realm of darkness at times, okay? But dunamis is power, and that's the word. It's important to understand why they translated ability. I'm not sure. 4 times the word dunamis is translated ability. I'm suspect of all 4 of them when they did the New Testament, okay? There are over 100 times it's used for power. And you look at it, it's talking about divine power. It's talking about God's power, God's dunamis, okay? It's talking about the divine power given to us through the Holy Spirit. Dunamis is the word, okay? 4 times it's used. Once here, okay? I think it's very easy to misunderstand this because, again, we throw these words out and go, talents and abilities. Oh, okay, great. This is my talents and abilities. And we tend to think of, I can play the piano. I can preach. I can teach Sunday school. We tend to think of these things as our own fleshly talents and abilities. I do not think that's what he's talking about. One of the other 4 times is in Hebrews 11:11, he's talking about Sarah. Okay? Abraham's wife, it said she was given the power to conceive in her womb. Okay? Is that like natural ability? I don't think so. She was 100 years old. Okay? It says she was dried up. Her womb did not drop seeds. I mean, it's the way that it actually talks. And she was given supernatural power to conceive in her womb. I don't think that had to do with personal ability. Okay? The other time, it's used twice in 2 Corinthians 8, where it talks about these people that were, this group of people in Macedonia that were under oppression, they were impoverished, they were oppressed, it was really ugly for them, they were really struggling in poverty, and they gave to the ministry. Okay? According to their ability and beyond their ability. And I think the word was used purposely by Paul to express God empowered them to give beyond. He gave them the power to give and still exist, to still live. All the rest of the times, over 100 times, it's used to speak God's supernatural power. Okay? So, that, we're not talking about your talent when it comes to the word talent means something. Is the talent yours? Or was this is not a talent that was yours. It said this was a talent that was the possession of the master. Okay? This talent was not theirs. It wasn't their talent and their ability. It was, the talent was the possession of the master. Okay? It was not theirs. It wasn't given to them. And it wasn't given to them. This is not capitalism at its finest. Okay? It was not given to them for their profitability. It was only the only right response. They are slaves of the master. Okay? Understand that. We recoil at that always. I hope we can begin to change our recoiling and gain a peace and a contentment with the fact that God says if we're in a right relationship with Him, we are slaves of our master. Our life is not our own. It's been bought with a price. Okay? It is not about doing what I want to do. I don't have rights. I have given up my rights. I am a slave under the authority of my master. And if we do not like that, we're in dire trouble in our eternal state. The only right response to our master is obedient, total, complete surrender to the slave. Right? Not when he wants to. Not when I feel like it. Okay? It's a very, very important reorientation that we need to have, particularly in our culture when the highest evil is somehow slavery, right? I mean, we have, I think it's the direct work of the enemy to make the, I mean, you could kill somebody and be a better person than having a slave, right, in our culture. I mean, having a slave is like the worst of things. To make someone a slave, that would be the worst thing you could do to them. That's, again, a tragic misunderstanding. Okay? Because that's not true. The slave of the benevolent, loving master is a wonderful place to be. My needs are taken care of. He went away for a very long time. The implication is they were certainly taken care of. Now this wasn't with the talents, with the money that he gave them to invest and do some, but it doesn't give any implication that that's how they were taken care of, right? One of them buried in the ground. Obviously, it didn't do him a lot of good, right? He put it in the ground and buried it. They were taken care of because a benevolent, loving master, it's the sweetest place to be. I don't have to worry about rent or paying my bills or security. What is my purpose in life? My purpose in life is to serve my benevolent, loving master. That is not the greatest evil. That is not a bad thing. I take it a step further because I want to talk about, just for a moment, when we talked about last week about the bridegroom, okay? And we talked about the 10 virgins waiting for the bridegroom. Now, there's something I don't want you to lose, and so I'm willing to emphasize it again this week because it is in the same line of thinking, is that when the bridegroom... Here's how I see this world. Here's how I believe that the Bible describes it, okay? The Bible describes Jesus as the bridegroom, right? Anybody have any question about that? The Bible describes Jesus as the bridegroom, okay? And he describes us as what? As the bride of Christ, right? So how does that look, okay? I believe how that looks is that we are, when we are born again, okay? When we come to the point of complete surrender, which, by the way, is really what marriage is, laying your life down for the other one, giving it up, okay? It's a figure that God puts there, a description that God puts there to help us understand it. But as we become married, I believe we become married at that point. We become contractually married. We're in the betrothal period. In the Jewish marriage, we need to understand that the betrothal period was... The only way to get out of the betrothal period was what? What was Joseph as a righteous man going to do to Mary? Write her a certificate of divorce, right? Even though they had not consummated their marriage, right? So it is seen as a binding marriage agreement, legally binding marriage agreement, betrothal. It's not like us. Well, we're engaged. That means we're just a little more serious in dating. We're still checking each other out and see if we like each other. But, you know, it's always, like, I was giving the ring back, you know? That's not the way it was, okay? Betrothal was a binding forever relationship. The only way it could be broken was with a certificate of divorce. Jesus said the only way for that to happen is if the bride and the groom, I'd say, but if the bride, he says, is unfaithful during that period. During that betrothal period, if the bride is unfaithful. It does not talk about if the bride is unfaithful even after the marriage is consummated. Okay? Once the marriage will become one flesh, that is a different state and a different way that God looks at. Then it's to be the forgiveness of sins. He doesn't say that infidelity in marriage is reasons for divorce. It's not what he teaches. Jesus said, the words he uses are very particular and very, very clear, actually. That he says it's unfaithfulness during the betrothal period is the only reason, just like Joseph was going to write Mary's certificate of divorce because she was pregnant during the betrothal period. And he hadn't had sex with her. Okay? So she was doomed to be unfaithful until God told him differently, and she was not unfaithful, so he did not do that. The important thing for us to understand, and I think this is a very important picture, because master and slave is a very important picture, but the one picture that is also very important that it gives us is we, personally and as a church, are the bride of Christ waiting for his return. Okay? That's who we are. I would count it that we're in the betrothal period. Okay? We are bound in a marriage agreement with Christ, okay? And the marriage will not be consummated until the bridegroom returns, right? For his bride, right? And at that point, the marriage absolutely will be sealed. What are we in the process? We should be, how do we live our lives? Do we live our lives like that? How do we live our lives as the betrothed, as the engaged bride waiting for the return of a bridegroom? Do we live our lives, oh well, I got him now, I got the ring, I got it signed, when he comes back, fine, I'm gonna quit the diet, man. I'm gonna go back to eating bonbons and watching TV, you know? I'm gonna quit trying to look good and working out now, you know, cause now I got him, you know, it doesn't matter when he comes back here, hey, you just have to accept me the way I am, right? How do we live? Is the bride anticipating the coming of a bridegroom? Is she longing for that? Is she looking forward to that sexuality that they'll be able to experience? Is she excited about it? Is she wanting to know who her bridegroom is, trying to learn who her bridegroom is, trying to become a better bride so that she can be a wife as she's supposed to be? We should be, that is the watchfulness that he calls us to have. Not sitting in our family and we got this done and I'm saved, so what the heck, right? And I'm married, so what difference? I'm in contract with him. We are supposed to be preparing ourselves to be the bride of Christ. To live in this wonderful, erotic, passionate relationship with our bridegroom. Okay? That is what we should be preparing ourselves for. Looking and longing for that time. Right? An unfaithful betrothed bride, it will not go well. And it's the same thing he's talking here. He talks about 10 virgins, they all look the same. He talks about they're all slaves, they all call him master. What's the difference? It's how they act during that time. So, the important thing, you know, the key to understanding how this affects us isn't, okay, God gave you 3/4 million, gave you 1.5 million, gave you 3.8 million, so what are you going to do with it now, right? Obviously, that's not what he was saying. The thing he was saying is, what is this possession that I put you responsible for and in charge for, according to what? According to your ability, according to your dunamis. According to the power, I have given you the power, okay? Look at the brides. What was the difference in the lamps? Some had oil, some didn't. Some had power to light, some didn't. Okay? Jesus is saying that I give you talents according to the power that I have given you. Okay? So what is the talents? What is the things that he gives us responsibility for, and how do we deal with that. Again, this is a really critical thing. I believe that the talent is the opportunity to love. Now that's a pretty, probably a big mouthful for you. So I ask you to chew on that, okay? What does God give us that are His possessions? His people to love. Okay? That's a very important thing to consider, because what do we do with that? Do we act like the person that was given the talent, that was given the opportunity to love, but did what? Said he was afraid. Said that instead he was in the mode of what? Self-preservation. Understand a couple of things. If any of your bosses came up to you, okay, or somebody you know, and said, "Here's 3.8 million, take care of it. When I get back, we'll talk about it," right? I mean, think about it for a minute, okay? What are you going to do? Are you just going to go out and just willy-nilly, "Oh, let's play the slot machine, okay? See if I can make some money for him," right? It's not your money. It's his money that you're going to be accountable for when he comes back. What are you going to do with it? Okay? There's a very important thing. The truth is, that investing it, doubling their money, immediately going out and doing it, took what? Risk. Risk. Somebody gave you $3.8 million to go out and do it, and I'll be back, and I'm going to hold you accountable for what happened with that? I would say the message here, some of you won't like this, but I would say the message here is this: to live dangerously. Okay? To be willing to risk. It isn't their money to do what they want with, right? This is the master's money. This is not for them to profit. There is nothing about this that is for them to profit. The only responsibility they have is to be the slave, cause the master to profit. They're slaves of the master. Okay? Now, are they willing in that love of their master, in their care for their master, in their desire to please their master, in their willingness to, their life is not their own, but my purpose is to serve my master, am I willing to be risk? To live with risk? Am I willing to live dangerously? Because, let me say this, if we love biblically, we're living dangerously. What are we in risk of? Rejection? Right? Being taken advantage of? If we are willing to pour ourselves out with no thought or gain of giving back for ourselves, there's a difference. We're not talking about American dating, man. That's all about trying to get that person's affections turned on you for your gain in the long run. We're talking about pouring out to people with nothing in return. With no credit, with no acclamation, with potential rejection. When Jesus said these people, the ones that were the good and faithful servant, were those who were willing, the talent to be given, the opportunity to love. Okay? I believe that is the talent that God gives us, is the opportunity to love. Now, the first parable we talked about, he commanded them to love my people. Feed my people, according to time, right? And the 10 virgins, they said, some didn't have the power to feed it. Now he says, I'm giving you according to the power I give you. According to the dunamis that I give you. Now I'm going to give you this power. What are you going to do? Now, again, let's be really careful here. He is not talking about some far off different pagan worshipping people in Machu Picchu or something. You know? He is not talking about a people who do not acknowledge this God. All these people were claimed to be slaves of the Most High God. He called them his slaves. They called him his master. And what's the difference? Were they willing to be faithful with the opportunities to love his people that he gave them? You say, well, that's pretty abstract, David. I would contend it's not. Because next week we'll talk about this third parable here, the sheep and the goats. And the difference between the sheep and the goats is those who took the opportunity God gave them to love his people, or who didn't. Okay? And the results are the same. It's heaven or hell. It's not what you look like. It's not that you all have lamps and you're tempered. It's not that you're dressed right. It's not that you claim to be a slave. It's not that you're enthusiastic about the return of the bridegroom. It's what you do. Again, the power, the dunamis, God gives us. Okay? The supernatural power to love, because it takes supernatural power. Because loving is me regarding you as more important than myself. Is me pouring my life out to you without asking back. Okay? That has the potential to leave me empty. What did he say the problem was? He said, the one he was given one talent, he says, I was afraid and went away and hid your talent in the ground. So I was afraid of what? I was afraid of what? I was afraid that maybe you don't really understand me. I was afraid that I'm going to pour out and I'm going to be left empty. I am insecure about people's acceptance of me or people's rejection of me. Jesus, there's a question mark in here that in my New American Standard, I don't know what versions you guys have that has it, but actually when the master came back and he says, but the master answered and said to him, you wicked, lazy slave. You say that I reap where I did not sow and I gather where I have no seed? There's a question mark there. This says question mark? There's supposed to be a question mark there. This was not acknowledging that this master was an evil, wicked master. Okay? Be careful. This master obviously is a very loving, benevolent master. How did he respond to those who were obedient, to those who were willing to take the opportunity he gave them to love and act on it at risk. Not self-protecting, right? Not gathering around me security, not trying to make myself secure, but willing to risk, willing to put myself out there and be vulnerable. Jesus, what the master is doing, what Jesus is doing is calling the hypocrisy of this. Well, if that's how you really, that's not how you really felt. The truth is, this is not how you really felt. What you really felt is you were concerned with yourself and with your security and your well-being more than you were mine. So I would ask you to consider, and I ask you to go back and reread it, because this is huge. Because the ones who dealt with the talents that God gave them, right, the opportunities to love his people, the ones who dealt with that correctly, he says, enter into my kingdom, man. And, you know, all I have is yours. Enter into a good relationship with me. The ones that didn't, he cast out the worthless slave into outer darkness in that place where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. They look the same. They all call themselves slaves of the Most High God. And they have the ability to do the right thing. God said, I promise to give you the ability. I think we want to be very careful. Did they lose their salvation then? Is that what you're saying? Because they didn't do the right thing? No. They weren't saved. I don't believe that once you're born again, that's something that you lose. But the difference is if you're truly born again, if you're truly dead to yourself, if you're truly willing to lay your life down for God, which means others, to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Remember, those are the two commandments that were given. But it would be
obvious and evident in your life. If you're afraid to risk love, you're in danger. Let's pray. God, it's so easy to be in the self-preservation mode, to want to get ourselves acknowledged, to want to get ourselves the assurance of our salvation to come from other people around us. To care, to be self, full of self. To not regard others as truly more important than ourselves. That's what matters. We're afraid of being rejected, of being left empty. So we go hide what you gave us. We bury a hole and come back and say, well, I knew you were tough. God, I would ask you to renew our thinking that we would realize that being watchful, because Jesus, you said it pretty flat out, you're a bridegroom who is returning for his bride. We're betrothed, and what are we doing during this period of time? Are we preparing to spend the rest of our life in a marriage relationship with you? Far greater than anything we can know on earth, where the blessings of this earth and marriage on this earth are just a foreshadow of the ecstasy and passion and security and fulfillment and joy and happiness that the marriage with you will bring. I thank you that you have given us, promised us, the dunamis, the power to be obedient. It's a matter of, are we willing to live our lives for your benefit, or do we live our lives concerned with benefiting ourselves? Please distinguish that, God, because we tend to cloak it and cover it up in ways that are not true. I thank you, Jesus, that you not only gave us the right, you gave us the ability to have a relationship with our Father. Amen.